Taking a look at your personal computer this morning with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along. And if you have some questions about your computer or maybe about some of the software that's going on, the new Windows Vista, we'll talk about that right off the bat here. But if you have a question, please feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Don't be intimidated. Many people call who don't have a lot of experience with computers and they have problems. And if you're one of those people, that's fine. Or if you're somebody who is pretty knowledgeable about computers and have a question, that's great too. Give us a call. Pete, welcome back.
Oh, he's great, Larry.
Let's take a look at Windows Vista and Office 2007. They rolled off last Tuesday.
They rolled off last Tuesday, and I went to a breakout rollout seminar Thursday, talking about a lot of different features for Vista, also for Microsoft Office, and then their Windows Server product. They're rolling them all out at the same time. Interesting statistic, if you were to go back and look in terms of the operating system and Office being released at the same time was 11 years ago. So it's a major campaign, major time for Microsoft. Some of the things that they've done, 2,800 new features in the Vista product, which is... I remember when, I think it was either the second edition of 98 or Windows ME, one of them corrected 3,000 bugs or flaws. So... now, 2,800 new features. They expect it to affect approximately 200 million people over the next 12 months in terms of who will be using it or experiencing their product. They claim no more blue screens, blue screen of death,
yeah.
when the system crashes. I think it's green. depending upon the version you get, and this is what I don't understand in this day and age.
Screwy marketing, huh?
They break it down into five products, and realistically, four for most people. The fifth version is really for large businesses or what they call enterprises. You have Vista Home Edition Basic, Home Edition Premium, which is like the media version for XP. The business edition, which would be more towards the professional XP edition. And then they have the ultimate edition. And they have the price point. The full retail version goes from $199 through $399 for the ultimate version. And the enterprise is based on licensing for, X number of systems. So that's a totally different cost and licensing issue. They've changed the look and feel, and in order to get this feature where you look like you're flipping through pages or through applications, happens at the premium level, not the basic version. So, which I said is like their media center XP version. They're also talking about connecting things like your Xbox 360. And obviously you have to have a network involved in that, but trying to tie all of your gadgets together. And if people have shopped cell phones recently, there's a Windows Mobile version. Mm-hmm. Personally, I had one. I had my 30-day period to check it out, and personally, I just want the phone. I don't want my phone to be booting up to Windows and waiting. Windows, and I didn't need all those bells and whistles. That's out there too. Some other interesting things to just be aware of: the maximum support for memory in a Vista system is 4 gigabytes of memory. I don't know why they put an upper limit on it, but that's what it is. The other thing, I took some notes in terms of what they stated were requirements and what they felt were also capable of running the new Vista operating system. And they said what's capable is a system that has 512 megs of RAM, what they consider to be premium ready, Home Vista Premium Edition ready, would be 1 gigabyte of RAM. And at a personal note, XP loves to have at least 1 gig of RAM. So if your system doesn't have that, you know, that's at least a good level to go to. Graphics, of course, DirectX 9 is something that's part of the Vista operating system, and you need to have probably 128 meg video card. Hard drive space, minimum of 40 gigabytes with 15 gigabytes free, which I just say, wow. But, you know, if you look at the size and the drive capacities today, that's really, I wouldn't even consider it entry level. Probably, you know, 120, 160 gigabyte hard drive. DVD, you know, drive for yeah. optical. Internet access. They've got some new parental controls in there. There's a lot, like I said, 2,800 features, so there's a lot to learn again.
Boy.
I stated this before, what I don't understand from a marketing standpoint in this day and age where things are really, you know, wired or internet-enabled, is that if an end user needs a feature and they really feel there's this need to charge for that, that there's a fee for that, is it something that should be there and all I have to do is turn it on versus, oh, I need to go and get this other box because I have to upgrade.
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand, because they're relying on the end user knowing how to make the best decision, and I just don't think that's fair. I really don't think that's the right way to do it, but
it's done.
That's the way it is.
Well, Rosie in Minocqua has a question for you, so let's go to Rosie. Hi, Rosie. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you. I am one of those people who are intimidated, so I appreciate it. I have had some sort of change in my computer, and I've done as much as I possibly can, having taken notes from Peter every time he's on to try and get to the bottom of it. I just have Windows XP operating system, and it just went to an excruciating. The slowness of it just made me feel that there was something going on. I've got all kinds of antivirus and, you know, adware, SpyBot. In fact, SpyBot, which normally took about 20 or 30 minutes to run previously, now takes 4 hours to complete. So I know there's something going on. I've done all of the things you've talked about before with scan disk, defrag, disk cleanup, and done a lot of your online scans from your site to try to find what is happening. That brings up a question in mind about temporary files,
right.
And I have a ton of files with extensions .tmp and .temp, and what I wanted to ask is it safe to just get rid of those and delete those? Am I correct that you just don't really need to have temporary files out there?
Correct, and there's an easy way to do that.
Okay. I've done the search thing and hidden files, and I've identified them as much as I can.
Okay. Now, do you use Internet Explorer, Mozilla, for web browsing?
Internet Explorer.
Okay. Do you delete the history files?
I always do that.
Okay.
And I have AdSmasher and the Trend Micro Spy Trap running at all times. So I really I have not been able to identify anything virus-wise or spyware or malware or whatever.
Okay.
That always comes up clean. So that just, you know, led me to searching around there. I saw those temp files, and I don't even know if that has anything to do with the operating system or not. But before I went, you know, clearing out all those out there, I was afraid that I was going to get myself in trouble doing that.
Okay. One program I've had pretty good success with, and I've mentioned it before, is Easy Cleaner.
Yep.
Which I don't know if you've downloaded and used that to delete temporary files.
I actually tried doing that, and
okay.
I got knocked out of there a couple times. So that is another thing on my list. There are some files
that it won't delete because they're actually in use by the operating system,
right?
Even though they are temporary.
Okay.
So it's sort of like if you were to shut down and go to the next session, those files would be left, and if you ran it again, then they would be deleted. So there's always these temporary files that the operating system leaves out there because it's actually using the hard drive space to work in conjunction with the RAM of the system to make the whole system work efficiently.
Okay. And if I could just ask very quickly, if you could say a little bit about system restore and using that properly, because as I thought, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead and wipe all these files out, and what if I, you know, get in the trick bag. How do I get back to a safe place?
Before I mention stuff about that, in terms of your Windows startup, do you have you worked on minimizing how many programs you have running?
I have.
Okay.
To the best of my ability, but based on previous discussions you've had, I've tried to do that.
Because realistically, the only icons that you should be seeing on your, on that lower right-hand side would be your network icon if you're hooked up to the internet.
Right.
Some people like to have AOL, you know, for instance, you know, for chatting and stuff like that. But you don't really need to have that there.
Okay, I've minimized that as much as I can safely do.
Antivirus will typically have a little icon there. If you're running a backup system, I use a product that's made by Seagate called Mirra, M-I-R-R-A, that will reside there because it needs to be on, and it monitors your files for backing them up if they change.
Okay.
So programs like that that are actually useful, those are the ones that, you know, that you need them to be operating.
Right.
Those are the ones that should be on that lower right side. Anything other than the ones that you really need, you shouldn't have anything there.
Okay.
As far as system restore, what I usually do is I have it, if I make any major changes to the system where I install an application, I do the system restore, create a restore point myself before I do the install.
Oh, okay, that's what I was looking for.
And, you know, say, you know, this, it was working before I installed, you know, whatever the software was, and put my own date and put Peter next to it.
Okay.
And then create the restore point, and then I go ahead and install the application. And if everything's working fine, you know, after a couple of days, then I create another restore point that, so I, now I have a picture of that with the new application running.
Okay.
And then the system will generate certain checkpoints over time as long as you have it turned on.
Okay.
If you have it turned off, then you can't do anything that I just mentioned because it allocates space on that hard drive for the system restore feature.
Right, and I do have mine turned on. I just thought it would be nice to say, okay, today at 11 o'clock, I know I'm good, and then start monkeying around with getting rid of those things if I caused myself a problem. I just wasn't sure. You know? So
okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't. The system restore, I would find that sort of in the control panel?
If you go
to
click manually. Click on start, click on accessories, and then click on system tools.
Okay, gotcha.
It's accessible that way or through the control panel.
Okay.
And there's also something I've mentioned before, which is if you, when you get into system restore, you'll see a line that's that has system restore settings. If you click on that, by default, it's usually at about 12% of the operating system.
Make it 4%.
And I would drop it down to probably
1%. Oh, my. Okay, I wrote that down wrong. I had heard you mention that before.
Yeah, because it, you know, if you look at, do the math on it, if you had a 40-gig hard drive, you know, 10% is 4 gigs, so 12% is a little bit more than that.
Okay.
You don't really need that much.
Okay.
Same thing with the recycle bin. Right mouse click on the recycle bin, click on properties, and make that about 1% as well.
Okay.
And those are things that can actually help speed up a system because depending upon how many files you have on your computer and how much free space you have and what kind of applications you're using, if you're working on pictures or music files, those are typically large files, you're using like chalkboard space in the memory of the system and also with the hard drive, and then the things are going back and forth, and if you don't have enough free space, then the computer is kind of in tight quarters and it's got to juggle things more often and spend the time with the CPU to figure out how I'm going to juggle all these things.
Okay.
So the more free space you have, the faster your system will be.
And I, after the deep frag, I mean, I have like 73% free. There's not much on this computer, so I thought, why? What has happened to the operating system? So,
All right.
Thank you so much for your help. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Good Thanks, luck. Rosie, for calling. And let's turn to Jim in Delafield next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
I last week acquired a laptop with Vista Home Premium on it.
Okay.
And I bought a router, and I set up a network, and I'm able from the laptop now to access the internet through the desktop and also to do email the same way. However, when I try to import, I don't know how to import my contact list from the desktop to the laptop. I look in there, I don't know what to look for. I don't have, I can't go to the C drive. That's on the other machine.
So you have them both hooked up through a router?
Yeah.
Okay. What you need to do, did you use Outlook Express?
Yes.
So you're talking about like your
Outlook Express is on the desktop.
Right.
In Vista, there is no Outlook Express. It's now just called Mail, Windows Mail.
Yeah. Okay, so what you need to do, there's actually a couple of steps. One is in order for you to know where your Outlook Express files are stored.
I found that.
Okay, so you know where that is?
Yes.
Okay, and you can actually change it to, be something else, a different directory or folder. But as long as you know where those are, where your email is stored, if you do a search for .wab,
yes,
that's your Windows address book or your contacts.
I'm doing the search on the laptop or the desktop?
On the desktop, because
yeah,
you're saying
you
said your desktop is your older system.
Right.
Okay, and you want to import from that to the
Correct.
Laptop.
Correct.
Now what you need to do is using Windows Explorer is to go locate those folders on your desktop
Right.
and right mouse click on them and enable the sharing of those.
Okay.
And along with that, both your desktop and your laptop have to be part of what's called a work group.
That's where I'm getting.
So in other words, if one of your work groups says MS Home and the other one has a name, if you call it Pete or Jane or Jim or.
Right.
Doesn't matter. They're not going to see each other. So they need to be part of the same work group.
Okay.
So if you right mouse click on My Computer and click on Properties,
right.
And I believe it's probably the first tab that comes up, there's a part there that you click on which will allow you to change the work group name or give it a work group name.
Mm-hmm.
And once that's done, you have to reboot your system so that you've both established your work group as the same on each system, and you've created a share for your desktop so that now your laptop can go and say hi to your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And then because the folder is shared, it now has access to it. So then you use your laptop when you go to import. You can go and point to that folder on your desktop, and it will see those files and then allow you to import them.
When I make that work group, I'm going to use computer name, I presume, in the properties folder.
You right mouse click on. I know in XP, you right mouse click on My Computer, and go to Properties,
right,
and then under computer name.
Yeah.
There should be a little button to hit for renaming or work group.
Yeah, it says, for example, Mary's Computer or something. You can enter the name in there.
Well, it's not just the name.
Oh, change.
Change.
Oh, yeah,
So you want to change the work group. It might be default MS Home I see a lot, but both those systems need to be in the same work group.
Okay,
and if you want a lot more details with that, if you go to either my tips page at infostar.com or the TechLinks page, and you'll can click to them off of the menu on the top left, and go down to like networking or home networking. There's a lot of excellent resources out there that will give you more information than you probably wanted.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Have a personal computer question? Give us a call at 1 642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Jeff in La Crosse. Yeah.
I forgot one important thing. For those people that are looking to upgrade to Vista,
okay,
you know, whether or not it's the right thing to do, and let's say you have all the requirements that they're saying that you need, there's actually a resource posted on Microsoft's website, and I've got a link to it. I had a link to it last show. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the top, listed within the top 10. There's a link there where you can download a test of your system to see if it's actually going to work well, because you may have to upgrade software. The software that you have on your system might not be Vista ready. So that was an important thing that I just realized they left out. You should test your system, because I had someone email me and say, hey, you know, should I do this? And I said, well, if you meet the requirements, that's fine. But if you've got software that you want to make sure that it works with Vista, you really should do this test. And the person emailed me back and said, I'm not going to use it.
Okay.
So that's a really important thing to know that you should do. And XP was the same way.
Yeah.
XP was exactly the same way.
Jeff in La Crosse, we go to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
I got both a general and a specific questions for you.
Okay.
I recently got a Vista-ready 64-bit PC.
Okay.
And in the couple months that I've had it, I've noticed how little software there is out there that is compatible with it.
Yep.
And I'm getting Vista supposed to be delivered to me today,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be upgrading my general question is how long am I going to have to wait to get some more software that'll be ready for this thing, and it, will there be specific places to look for it? And then my specific question is I've discovered, and I've looked all over for an answer, and apparently there isn't any, is that there are absolutely no webcam drivers available for a 64-bit system. And is there any solution at all?
Well, the first part of yours actually came up as part of the discussion last Thursday. And there's a little disappointment there. So, and they're thinking, well, maybe, you know, Service Pack A or Service Pack 1 is going to fix the 64-bit version of Vista. So it might, your system might be Vista ready,
mm-hmm.
but I probably would not install that version for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Should he go back and try the test?
I mean, you can try you can go back, you know, use Microsoft's website and do the test and see if you've got software on your machine, you know, that might not actually, you know, work after you do the upgrade.
Huh.
So, you know, that's what that test will do for Microsoft.
Oh, I missed that earlier. Then on Microsoft's
website. If I have the link to it on infostar.com. If you go to the current top 10,
mm-hmm.
there's a link at the very top of the list that talks about the Windows Vista resource and then also the link to the test.
Okay, great.
But that your 64-bit readiness came up in terms of it being tested and really underperforming.
Uh-huh.
So that probably leads me to believe that there's some difficulty in trying to program both the OS, the operating system, and applications to work for what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to, you know, just be a little bit more patient.
Okay.
I mean, that's all I can tell you, because that's what I've heard.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is, in terms of wanting to know more probably about what's under the hood in terms of actually trying to find things that people tinker with, that maybe they get them to work in roundabout ways. And there might be people out there that have fixes to the OS, but, you know, they're beta testers or whatever. Is the links to the forums that I have on the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, there are some forums up there that are some real hardcore, tech people that like MCSC Vista.ms. There are a bunch of resources under those forum links that are specifically for hardware and software issues. And some of the people out there might be, you know, taking it to the next level with what you have. So that's where I would look for more information.
Okay.
So I'm getting Ultimate delivered today, mm-hmm. and you're thinking until I run this test that I should probably hold back and actually put it in there.
If you have a lot of applications, I mean, you definitely want to run the test on your system. Mm-hmm. Which version XP are you running now?
It's the 64X or X64.
Okay. Yeah. I would run the test. And before I do the install, I would probably do some queries on some of the forums out there and the groups at google.com in terms of what you have, the actual hardware, and, you know, the upgrade from what you have to where you want to go with the new version of Vista Ultimate and see what you're hearing out there. Whether or not it's a good experience or a bad experience.
Okay.
And the other thing is another word of caution, and I've mentioned this many times over the years, if you're having a problem with your system, upgrading the operating system does not fix the problem. You have to fix the problem before the upgrade,
Okay. Because
what you can have is a crash in the middle of the upgrade where you can't go back and you can't go forward. So the upgrade doesn't fix the problem. The problem's got to be fixed before you do an upgrade. So figure out what's going to work. And I, you know, with where you're at, I would really do some checking to see if there are other people out there that have had some experience with what you're about to do or thinking of doing, so that if there are any surprises, you've already downloaded the patches or the drivers or the little fixes you need before you go and do it.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good
yep.
advice.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Been there, done that. It's not fun when you have a system crash in the middle of doing the upgrade. So that's why I really say if you know, the upgrade does not fix the problem.
Remember that. The upgrade does not fix the problem. Jeannie in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
My problem is really an odd one. On my old computer, my pictures on the screen were all squiggly and very hard to see. Very, very, very poor. So anyway, when the computer kind of froze up and crashed, I bought a new one. Thinking, well, that will solve it, because I have called MSN numerous times and they run through it and there's nothing wrong, but I can't see the pictures. They're terrible. Well, guess what? When everything was transferred to the new one, they're still there. The pictures are terrible.
What kind of pictures are you referring to?
Any picture on the screen that I'm working on, you know, like the mm-hmm. even the my homepage. You know, you get a picture in the middle about the news. Mm-hmm. You can't make out the picture hardly because it's so screwed up.
Now, do you get a new computer with a new monitor?
I got everything new. And yes, the new monitor, the thin screen, I had the old one was the big heavy one, and he transferred everything for me, and the pictures are still bad.
So I
called MSN again, and I called my printer. My printer worked fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it has nothing to do with that. And MSN just doesn't explain it to me, or something is wrong. How can I get the picture so I can see it?
So these pictures, are they like pictures from a digital camera?
No, it's the news pictures on the
website.
Yeah, on the website. Yeah.
So you go to some news source, a daily paper, and there's a picture in the...
Yeah.
And the picture's bad.
Yeah, right. It's all squiggly.
The monitor you have, is it...
It's brand new.
Yeah. Boy, that's pretty odd, because usually when you set up a new system, you have the video card can handle a certain amount of resolution and pixels and with the memory in the system for the video card, how much colors you can show.
Would there be some kind of compatibility issue with the provider and the...
Well, it was on the old one, too.
That's why I wonder...
You mean on MSN?
Yeah. What do you think?
Um, I would probably. Do you have access to? Do you know how to download files?
Yeah, I've downloaded files.
Okay. Do you use different web browsers, or are you using just one web browser?
No, mostly one. I mean, the only thing I really do on it is I do my research on genealogy. That's mm-hmm. about the main thing, but I like to go into the news and stuff like that.
But, I mean, are you using Internet Explorer for your web browser?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another good thing for a lot of people is to have two different browsers on your system, not just one. In case you're having problems with one, you can use another one.
Well, wouldn't that be on the default?
No, no. You actually have to typically go out and get and download it from a website. So something like Mozilla or Firefox.
What would be a good one?
I like Firefox, but...
Yeah.
Firefox.
Yep. So that...
Know, I think that was mentioned. MSN mentioned that.
So what I would do, where I'm getting at is I would download another web browser and see if you have the same problems with the other web browser. Maybe when they moved stuff over to your new system, they didn't change the settings on your screen, you know, the settings for the video card, so that when, I mean, it would surprise me, but it's possible. I'm not ruling it out. If you right mouse click on your open desktop and then click on screen, you click on properties. So right mouse click on your open desktop, then click on properties, and then go through the tabs. I believe one of them is screen, and look at the settings. You should have something where it says at least 800 by 600.
Oh, yes. I've done that.
Okay. And what about...
it'll go up to 1,000, I believe.
What about the colors? Does it say 30...
The colors are good.
Does it say 32-bit color?
I don't remember that.
You better check that one.
I remember going into the properties and the screen. And
yeah, so where you see the pixels, where it says 800 by 600 or 1024 by 768... to the right of that, you'll see a number of colors. You might see 256 or 32-bit color or true color. I would select one of those, and it should, and if you click apply, it should reset your screen, and it'll do a test and give you like 15 seconds or so to see if it looks good. And if it does look good, then, you know, click OK and then use those settings. If you change it to settings that your system doesn't support, it'll tell you that it can't do that.
Yeah. Give it a shot, Jeannie, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Brian in Madison next. Brian, hi.
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 I have a more technical question. My saga is full of blood and thunder, but basically what I'm trying to do is make my system dual boot with Windows XP and Linux.
Okay.
And in the process of doing this, I've managed to destroy all of my old data and do all sorts of things as I tried to repartition the hard drives.
Right.
And what I've figured out, I think, is that I had a second hard drive that was in my old PC, and it was the primary drive. And I think that the master boot record on that second drive is what is causing Linux to go crazy and my restore for XP even to go crazy. And it wrote on the second hard drive as the master hard drive and did all sorts of horrible things to my system. What is the best way for me to completely wipe out that second hard drive and remove the master boot record from it so that it'll just act like, you know, so it'll be secondary and act like a secondary drive?
Right. One thing is to make sure, so you've got that second drive, you know it actually works in that configuration of being the secondary drive.
Yeah.
You know, they also call them master and slave.
Yeah, when I just had, before I tried to make it into dual boot,
right.
I just had it in my XP machine and it worked fine.
Right. Okay. You can use the if you can still bring up the operating system on that computer, or put it as another drive in another system, so make it a secondary drive in another computer. You can use Windows to either reformat it so you know,
right,
get everything off of it, or you can actually F-disk it and, you know, repartition that drive as well.
Okay. So F-disk will also take care of the master boot record on it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. F-disk is actually before formatting. So let's say you had a drive and it was a 20 gigabyte drive and you didn't have the operating system on it. One of the steps in the procedure of actually installing the operating system, although you don't see it, is to F-disk and create the partition so that it can use all of it, and then it formats or prepares the drive, and then it installs the operating system.
Right, okay.
So that's why sometimes you see, you know, multiple reboots when you're doing that.
I've got all kinds of crazy partitions on both drives now.
Yeah, let me interrupt you here for a second, because something that you've gone through, and you talked about, you know, having problems with destroying your old data, is when you do something like that where you want, and I know I'm probably telling you this too late, but when you're trying to set up a system with dual booting capabilities, and I've had ones where I've actually had three operating systems on them, is that you really need to make multiple backups of your data if you've got no other place, you know, where your data is, maybe even moving it to another hard drive so that you know, hey, I've got this other hard drive with my data on it, and then I've got copies of it on CDs or DVDs, so, and then test it to make sure that you can actually access them before you go ahead and proceed, you know, to do the surgery, because you're doing digital surgery on your system, and, you know, without making sure you can get back to your data,
right,
you know, there's no one else that's going to be out there to say, hey, I can really fix what your problem is and get all your old stuff back.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yep, thanks, Brian. Luck. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you listening in. We'll go right back to the phones, and this time we'll turn to Will in Madison. Will, hello.
Hi, how you guys doing? Before my question, first maybe a comment about the woman a couple calls ago. I know my 90-year-old dad on his computer, he has the fonts turned up so large so he can read them. That the images all look really bad and distorted because there's text going over the top of images. So I don't know.
That before, but I've never paid attention to the images during that.
Yeah. So I know I know whenever I use my dad's computer, I have to turn that down just so I can see what's on the web pages. So I don't know if that was a woman's problem or not. She might want to check that out. But to my question is, it's about networking. Old three-story lath and plaster house, so wireless doesn't work. So I have a wired network going, and it comes in on the first floor, and then running from the hub downstairs, I have it running up to the third floor where I'm running another computer and a 360. But I've been switching the cable in between the two when I want to use one or the other. Now, could I just stick I have another D-Link router laying around. Could I just stick that on there and use it?
Sure.
To plug both of them in and have it work?
Yep.
Would I have to open all the NATs up, make it an open router then?
No, actually, the router is really a switch.
Right.
So anything connected to that will just pass through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I can just throw that on there and that'll work like that.
Yep. Do that all the time.
Okay, cool.
All right, thanks.
What people should pay attention to with that is there's really three networking standards. The original was, 10 megabits per second. Then what's called fast Ethernet. The next level is 100 million bits per second. And the really fast one is 1 gigabit throughput. So the latest technology supports the 1 gigabit throughput. So in terms of Internet access, between the machines and your router and your internet service provider, it makes the pipe a lot wider, so there'll be a few less collisions going on.
Sure.
But I think I'm pretty sure the routers that they sell these days are 1 gigabit, you know, throughput. So
yeah, they're both 1 gigabit, yeah. And they both have the current mm-hmm. firmware.
Yeah, so.
So you should be fine.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks.
Have fun.
Ann in Janesville, your turn now. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about my media player. Okay, when I got my computer, everything was pre-programmed in it,
right.
Which I don't like because okay. They put programs in it I don't even want in there. And now I got Media Player 10 in there.
Okay.
How can I get rid of it to get Media Player 9 back in? Now, I did go into Add and Remove, and I didn't see no Media Player in there.
Why do you want to go backwards?
Because I don't like Media Player 10. I cannot figure it out. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. And I went into Add and Remove. I mm-hmm. did not find Media Player in there. So somebody told me that it was under Viewpoint. So I went back into Add and Removed. I deleted Viewpoint Media Player.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have Media Player 10. And so I turned around and I called Dell. And they came into my computer. And they can't get rid of it. Is there any way I can get rid of it?
Hmm.
Good question, huh?
Well, there might be a way out there. I haven't actually tried stepping back. I've done it with other Microsoft products. She's referring to Microsoft Media mm-hmm. Player. And usually, you know, when you go up a number, it's an upgrade, and she wants to go back.
Right.
And I know probably at least 2-3 years ago, I remember on one of the shows talking about someone installing DirectX, and the latest version of DirectX didn't work, so they wanted to go back.
I remember that.
And there's actually, and Microsoft tells you that you can't uninstall it, you know, once you do it. And there's actually a couple places that have programs that you can download to take you backwards. So Windows Media Player is something that's really, you know, that upgrade is kind of partially embedded into the operating system with the file types and some of the things that you do in terms of what it plays and how it interacts with your system. So you're going to have to look on the internet and the web to find perhaps a separate download program that will take you back from 10 to 9.
Well, see, I pulled up Media Player 9 again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after I deleted that Viewpoint.
Right.
And I tried to download 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't let me because 10 is still in here.
Right. And that's what I mean. If you go to the control panel and go into Add Remove Programs,
mm-hmm.
Did you look under Microsoft for Microsoft Media Player?
Just a second, and I could tell you because I got my computer okay. on.
Well, that's where you should look for it, and you know, do the Add Remove on there. If it's on your system, it'll remove it, and then
there's nothing on there.
Okay. I would go out and search on the internet for that. If you can't find something, you know, you can email me off of my website, infostar.com, and I'll do some prying under the hood and see if I can help you out with that one.
All right. Thank you, Ann. And give Pete, well, check first, and if you can't find something, get a hold of Pete, see what he can do for you.
I'm usually pretty good at finding these little esoteric things that... Every now and then you just want to step back instead of going forward.
James in Madison is next. James, good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I've recently gone from dial-up to DSL, and I'm a little concerned about this being online constantly for the security.
All right.
I've got Norton Internet Security, which has a block traffic option.
Okay.
Does that essentially do the same as, like, disconnecting with a dial-up?
That's more for probably like firewall and blocking access from things getting from the outside coming to your system.
Right.
And yep. also controlling the flow of traffic from your system going out
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you're aware of where you're going.
Okay. because what I did, I did the block traffic thing, then I mm-hmm. tried to connect, and it says you must be connected to the network. So it appears as though outwardly it's it just totally made everything invisible. But so, can I really trust that to be secure? Or
As long as you keep it up to date.
Okay.
You know, if there are flaws or exploits, as they call them, like Larry mentioned earlier in the show, I believe, was it iDefense from VeriSign,
mm-hmm.
Which is a security certificate provider, has got incentives out there for people to try to exploit the holes in the new operating system. They've put it out there for the for Windows XP, where they've awarded people, you know, monetary awards for finding these little holes and flaws. And Norton, being one of the larger names out there, along with you know, Windows Vista, you know, someone's out there is going to try and see if they can figure out a workaround.
Okay.
So it's nothing is 100%, but keeping it up to date is critical.
Well, you know, if what I had been doing, because I wasn't too secure with it, mm-hmm. is turning the computer off when I'm not using it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, a long time ago, people always said, well, you don't want to turn it off, turn it on. That was hard on the hardware.
Right.
Is that still a fact?
I leave my systems on all the time unless I'm gone for an extended period.
Okay.
You know, I would consider an extended period like a weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Hard on the hardware. The hardware is probably more reliable today than excuse me, than it ever has been. So I really wouldn't factor that, but you know, make sure your system's not collecting, you know, a lot of dust, so it can potentially overheat from that.
Okay.
Making sure you're up to date is so important. I see a lot of systems where you miss that, you know, update, and you don't want to pay the $30 today, but you will in a week or whatever.
Right.
And all it takes is that little window of opportunity. And I've got links on my website that talk about this new worm that's storming the globe. And that was put out January 22nd. And, you know, these things are, they come in these waves now.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as there's this little opportunity to get through because you let your guard down, you know, that's really what you should be concerned about. And like I said, nothing's 100%. So the more diligent you can be about being on top of it, the better. But leaving your system, turning your system off, that's a little extra security because nothing's going on when you're not there.
Right.
Don't share your hard drive, you know, there's really nothing you should be sharing unless you have your own network, and then you should be only sharing like a folder and not your entire hard drive. There's no reason to share the entire hard drive.
Okay. Could I ask one more quick question?
Okay.
TrueCrypt. Are you familiar with it?
What's that?
TrueCrypt.
TrueCrypt?
Yeah, it's a free program that creates a virtual drive on your hard drive.
Okay.
And then encrypts it, and everything in there is stored encrypted.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that, but I'm familiar with programs that do that. In fact, the new version of Vista has something called BitLocker for encrypting, and they basically tell you that, you know, if it's encrypted and you don't know how to get to it again because it's been accessed, you know, incorrectly, there are some of these things just like locked down and you're done. So, you know, you can encrypt your data, but, you know, I would just, I think all the other things you're doing are fine. But if you want that extra security, just make sure you fully understand how to get back to it. And, if you use passwords and codes and things like that, make sure you have them written down because, you know, I can break into a Windows XP system and get, you know, establish a new password, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be the same with something like BitLocker, you know, on Vista. So
okay.
Just a word of caution.
All right. Thanks for calling, James. Patrick in Madison, hello to you.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
A couple of solutions, I think. Peter, the way to remove media player is through ad remove programs, mm-hmm. and then she's got to click on add or remove Windows components.
Okay.
And it's listed at the bottom.
Oh, okay. Yep, forgot about that part. Yep.
And the second thing is the lady that was having trouble with her monitor. I found several times that there's interference that's causing it. And fluorescent tubes are a real good source of that interference. If she's got the monitor set up in the exact same location as the old one,
yep.
she might want to try moving it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be just a few feet, or to look around for sources of magnetism or, and that could be your problem.
That's another great point. Thank you,
yep.
Patrick, and I hope our previous callers are listening in.
Yeah.
Because those are good tips.
Yeah, two good suggestions, the larger font size and your environmental influence.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with Peter. Stay with us. We'll be back pretty quickly. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you listening in. Our lines are all filled. By the way, I should mention our email. If you want to email us, you can do so at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Sometimes when Pete's on, it's hard to get through, and an email might just do the trick. And Pete, we always have a top 10 list, and what do we got for our edification today?
Well, if you go to infostar.com and either click on the current top 10 or the archives and then scroll down to today's date, I've got a couple extra links about the Stormworm, which is going around, and then on the Windows Vista, which I had posted last month also again because, you know, they've just released that. The first one is called familywatchdog.us, so not a .com. It's a national sex offender database system, but it's actually tied in to mapping. So if you put in your address, then it posts key information for you on that. This next one, and I don't have any experience with, there used to be a site probably 2-3 years ago which allowed you to watch TV over the internet.
Yes.
And that got shut down. But it seems to have come back in a much larger scale now, because this one called nettvbroadcast.com claims their software, which you can download, will allow you to view 2,500-plus channels from all over the world for free using your internet connection. I've got a couple others listed there, and one is actually a hardware product that you can buy at like a Best Buy Circuit City. So don't have any experience with that, but it looks pretty intriguing. If you need to be able to do that. Number three, you know, with how large Google has become, it apparently is gained a lot of popularity in the government sector. And this resource is actually called ggreport.com, and its purpose is to provide a convenient source of ideas, information, and insight about Google specifically for the government professional. So.
Oh.
You know, if you have a need for it, you know, it's there. This other one, again, not a .com or .net, it's called outside.in. And it right now it's tracking 56 cities and 3,200 neighborhoods. It's a new kind of resource to help share information online about where you live, about your neighborhood and your community. And when you consider that online information is scattered among blogs and online papers and discussion areas and stuff, and government resources, this is trying to tie it all together. Number five is called TreeHugger, HUGGER.com, and it's a web magazine dedicated to everything that has modern aesthetics yet is environmentally responsible. So going green,
okay.
For example. Number six is DSIREUSA.org. It's a comprehensive source of information on state, local, utility, and federal incentives that promote renewable energy and energy efficiency. Number seven is called PhoneScoop, apparently very popular with cell phone sellers. It's a resource that posts cell phone carrier information, cell phone specifications and reviews by users.
Oh,
so
good.
Very useful. This next one for people looking for a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional is related to Windows operating systems will like this resource. It's aumha.org, and it's an independent Windows Resource Center posted by one of Microsoft's Most Valuable Professionals. Number nine is Wisconsin, WISCONSUN.org, and it's about Wisconsin Solar Energy Initiative, solar energy systems, connecting to the grid, case studies, and other information. And this last one is National Renewable Energy Lab, which is a federal government resource, and it's accessed at NREL.gov. And there is a consumer guide to getting your power from the sun and a few other solar resources I've posted there that should be insightful.
And all those are on your Infostar.com, your top 10 list.
Correct.
All right. Let's go to Scott in Appleton now. Scott, hello.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, my little cursor on my on my computer, I can't get it to move at all. It might jump around when I first turn it on. I've tried another mouse. Someone suggested getting a wireless and plugging it in.
So you're saying you replace the mouse and it still does the same thing?
Yeah, it just sits there. I can't get it to...
Now, is the mouse that you're using, is it plugging into the mouse port? Or is it plugging into, like, a USB port?
It's the mouse port.
Okay. And you said you got a new mouse. Are you able to plug it into a USB port?
I don't have one of those yet.
Okay.
I bought one to try.
Okay. If you're having problems with the one that's plugged into the mouse port, it could be that the port is bad.
I had my other mouse off my other computer.
Uh-huh.
The one that doesn't move is not connected to the internet. And I took the other one off my other computer, and
right.
It does the same thing. It actually plugs into a different port, but not a USB port.
Plugs into a different port.
Yeah.
Like a serial. How old are?
Yes.
So it's a serial. You're telling me like a serial connection.
Yeah, I've tried one of those,
uh-huh.
And then I, off my other computer, I plugged it in there.
Have you tried to reinstall the software to talk to the mouse, like drivers, updating drivers?
I figured that if I didn't have a mouse to be able to click on anything, I wouldn't be able to.
You can actually maneuver around Windows with the Alt key and the Tab key and the Control key and the Space bar.
Okay.
It might be a little tricky, but it is possible to do that. You just have to kind of observe where things are were going. And then also the Windows has symbol. When you hit the Windows symbol on your keyboard, that will bring up the Start menu, and then you can use your arrow keys to maneuver up and down. And then once you select one, you can hit the Enter key, selects what you're on, and then the Tab key moves around within the application. So it can be a little tricky to do it, but it is possible.
What about hooking up a wireless? You think it would do anything?
You can hook up a wireless mouse, but that if you're having problems, it doesn't sound like you're having problems with the port, because you said you hooked up a different mouse and it was doing the same thing. You're going to have to, whether you hook up with a wireless mouse, that wireless mouse has an access point that plugs into the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be using a port either way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to rule out that there's not a hardware problem in your system, but if you have a USB port, which version of Windows are you using?
XP is on there.
Yeah. My reaction, if you haven't used a USB port yet, would mm-hmm. be to use a USB-enabled mouse. The wireless, you know, keyboards, wireless mice that I've used, I'm not really a fan of them.
Right.
Depends on, you know, power consumption and battery life and They always seem to go fail me at the wrong time. But it is nice to not have a wire on your desktop. So there are pros and cons to it.
Right. Somebody suggested maybe get one of those, and maybe we could access the computer, straighten it out too. But
yeah.
And, all right.
And you know, the wireless is going to hook up to the USB port. So
right.
All right. It's a little bit more expensive. It unclutters your desktop.
Yeah.
You know, it's your choice.
Yeah, I'm just working on this for a while.
I watched the Super Bowl last night. There was one cute ad about mice and about a mouse, and they were using a sort of a caricature of a mouse and a couple of other animals playing with it. It was kind of cute. I don't even remember the name of the company, but the ad was cute.
Could have been Coca-Cola.
Yeah, it might have been Coca-Cola. There were a lot of Coca-Cola ads.
Man.
Oh, man. Good luck, Scott. Thanks. Ron in West Bend, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, good afternoon, fellows.
Hi.
I'm in the ancient league. I use Windows 3.1 and WordPerfect 5.1 and do fine. However, I'm buying a new PLC for a control process here at home, and that I was planning on buying an XP computer.
Okay.
Well, I heard about Vista, and I quick dialed up Hewlett-Packard, and I went over to Best Buy, and XP computers are a thing of the past.
Right.
Now, the company that makes the PLC computer, they are not yet updated. At least their sales literature doesn't indicate that
Right. They're
yet to Vista.
Right.
Now, I will not be hooked up to the Internet for the very reasons that you've had all the call-ins today.
Okay.
So I will not be able to get any updates of Vista once I buy the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So how long do I have to wait as a delay on a project before I can buy a Vista computer that is guaranteed to work with the computer, the PLC? That's what you use to program the PLC.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of going to Linux. The company does not have a Linux version.
Yeah. You really need to contact the company, you know, and find out when they're going to be ready. Some of them will be up to a year, and some will be even longer. Depends on, you know, the resources that they have to commit to, you know, testing and making sure things work. It's not Microsoft's court to...
Right, but if Microsoft let us buy XP, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have the problem.
Right. There are ways to still buy computers and get XP on them, but they're not going to be, they probably will not be available through the normal retail channels like a Best Buy, Circuit City, and some of those.
They aren't.
And Hewlett Packard, which is a manufacturer, Compaq and so forth, and Dell. Because those agreements with Microsoft are, we've got a new operating system. You need to ship the all new computers with it. You might be able to go to a local shop, and they could set up a system with you for you because they still have copies of XP available. You can go online and buy systems without operating systems. Probably get them from some online. Sellers like Tiger Direct, and maybe some like that, eBay sellers that are out there where you can just buy the system without the operating system, or they may even still have copies of XP that they can set up for you. So there are still some options available now. It's just a matter of how long they'll be out there. They say XP is going to be supported at least for another 5 or 6 years. So I wouldn't expect the source of XP licenses to dry up anytime soon.
Okay.
And would you buy or would you use an old screen that I have? I've got a CRT that was on a Pentium 1, or would you buy the new screen too with it?
You know, it probably works. It depends on how much, you know, money you have available to commit to your project, but you can buy 17-inch not LCD, but flat screens for probably within $100 or less. And I know if you look for rebates and stuff, I've been able to get 19-inch LCDs for under $110, which is pretty lucky. But, you know, the prices keep coming down on those because you're making such a large step between, you know, your older system and a new system. The CRT might be limited in terms of the resolution it supports, and you just might enjoy the view of your system a lot better with an upgraded monitor.
Yeah. Good luck, Ron. Thank you very much for calling. We'll go to Ron and Phillips next. Ron, hi.
How are you doing today? Hi.
Good.
Yeah, it's good. So I've got a question. It's similar to one that was asked earlier on the show, but I recently upgraded to, I think it's Explorer, Internet Explorer version 7 versus version 6.
Right.
And I've got some software. I've got some business software I use. Right after I did it, they send an email notice that don't upgrade because our software won't work. Is there any way to go back to Explorer, Internet Explorer 6?
So you mean they're saying that the Internet Explorer 7 has an effect on the software that you're using?
And I'm assuming it's probably just more for like upgrades and things of that nature. That's what they're saying, that their current software is not compatible, and the actual version that I use, unfortunately, is one they don't even support anymore. So
right.
I'd have to go to a new version, and spend another couple hundred dollars there. But
one option that might be available to you is you might be able to go back to the restore point.
Okay.
To prior to the Internet Explorer 7 being performed, because it's a pretty major upgrade to the web browser, and it's married to the operating system. So you might want to explore that as an option. It has no effect on your data files that you've had up until that point.
Okay.
So that's what's kind of nice about the restore is it doesn't do anything to data files. So if you've created some documents or spreadsheets and things like that, those are not going to be affected. It's just going to be the programs that you've installed since then.
Okay. And also programmed. I'm trying to clean up in my business computer a little bit, so I've deinstalled some programs. Those would probably show back up again.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's not a big deal. I can easily do that.
And I'm also assuming that you have Restore turned on.
Yes.
And,
yes, I do.
And you know the date that you did the upgrade. So
I don't, but I could probably go back a ways and figure it out.
Yeah,
figure that out. One other question is, you also talked about, it's a slow computer, and I'm looking at, the startup, getting rid of the icons you mentioned down in the lower right.
Yep.
I tried doing that, and one of them, it came up as I went to, it was for a printer, and it says, uninstalling this may have an effect of your printer operating correctly.
Okay.
That's something I should concern myself with. It's basically just a shortcut.
Yeah, you don't want to uninstall it. You just don't want to have it in your startup.
Correct, so, yeah, because the little startup key is just pointing to a shortcut.
Correct.
Okay, so
if you click on, if you click on start and then click on run and type in MSConfig, and then click on run, you'll have a bunch of tabs, and the right one says startup. And if you all the ones that have checks in the checkboxes are the ones that are going to show up on your lower right hand side.
Can you run? What was that? I go to the run menu.
Click on start, then click on run, and then type in
MSConfig.
It's short for Microsoft Configuration.
Okay, Microsoft MSC Config. Okay.
Yeah, and then click on OK, and so you're running that, and then it'll call up these tabs, and one of them is the startup.
Okay.
And you'll see checkboxes, and some of them might be hard to figure out what they are. You could shut them all off and then bring them back one by one to see which ones do what for you.
Okay.
There's also, if you go to infostar.com and click on the tips page, and I forgot which number it is, but there's a Windows startup paragraph that's got a bunch of tips has a tip there to tell you how to optimize your system for that, for the startup, and there are databases out there to tell you what some of those things mean that might be useful. And I mentioned this earlier, the memory for Windows XP, it really likes to operate, what I've found, is at least 1 gig of RAM. And RAM prices right now are at a good price point. So if your system has 256, you might have to forego that one 256 chip and get two 512s, or you might have to buy three 256s. It just depends on how your system is set up to do the upgrade, but that does definitely help with speed.
Thanks a lot, Ron, for calling. Appreciate it. And Alan in Manitowish Waters, you're next. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I have a friend who just dropped AOL, and he signed up for Yahoo.com for email, and they won't let him save his password, so therefore I use Firefox, and I'm trying to get him to use Firefox. Is there a way to access Yahoo.com, get the email from it, from Firefox?
Shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I don't know why.
With all the settings and stuff that you have to put into Firefox to get the email, I don't know where to get those settings from.
Have you looked at the Firefox site? They usually have FAQs and, you know, a discussion section.
I've gone through it. I haven't seen a thing about Yahoo. I have Firefox on my computer at home, but I get my email off my internet provider.
Right.
And they were able to give me all those settings.
Yeah, I would just probably check and see what's, you know, there's probably an answer out there. It's just I don't know it offhand for working with Firefox. And Yahoo and Hotmail and AOL are all web-based email providers. So you're not really downloading things to your system. It's all within the web environment. So he really shouldn't have a problem with it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Because when you go to AOL.com and check your email, you're actually using your application to look at and correspond, you know, in the email system, but it's really web-based. And
might be able to put the email address and the password in Firefox, and
sure,
it
yeah.
might download it, so I don't need those settings.
Should be able to save the preferences, so when he goes there, you know, it just works to access the information. And that's really cookie-based.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Peter, thank you so much. And once again, people want to get the top 10 list or answers to a lot of questions, they can go to your website.
Infostar.com. Well, there's a lot there.
There's an awful lot there.
It's been accumulated over the years.
And it's really, there is a wealth of information about practically any topic you want in the computer area, and with the top 10 list, a whole lot of other things too.
Yep.
Peter, thanks a lot. Appreciate you being with us today. Peter Green of Infostar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, with us once again. You'll be back in about a month, and
March 5th.
We'll do this all over again with him, so we'll look forward to his next visit on March 5th. Tomorrow, we will be visiting with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. As always, she will be on to talk about your pet's health, and we're going to look forward to visiting with her. She always has lots of great information, and I know she's going to have the same again tomorrow. So tune in. And in the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.